gone. Inference is enough to tell us that conscious agents were at work. You can infer the behavior of consciousness in the cosmos the same way, through inference. There is no need to meet and greet a cosmic architect. We only need to observe how the universe is behaving, not like bits of matter colliding, but like a mind doing everything with a purpose. The human touch. If you declare that consciousness has no place in explaining how the universe works, the human mind is left hanging out on an evolutionary limb by itself. Is that really probable? Some physicalists will reluctantly concede mind-like behavior in the cosmos, while refusing to call it conscious, finding the word radioactive. It is thought that soon after the Big Bang, much of creation was obliterated as matter and antimatter annihilated each other. But a tiny imbalance in favor of certain constants allowed the visible universe to exist, implying that matter and antimatter can reach a kind of peace treaty before both sides were totally wiped out. This reconciliation is known technically as complementarity, and two opposites that find a way to coexist are said to be complementary. For example, when two particles are entangled, as physics calls it, they display mirrored characteristics like spin and charge, even when separated by billions of light years. This makes them complementary. A change in one particle is instantaneously mirrored in the other. The implication is that complementarity is more fundamental than relativity, which takes the speed of light as an absolute limit. Instant communication isn't allowed, and yet non-locality occurs. This means that entanglement is more fundamental than the four basic forces in nature, which are bound by rules that also take the speed of light as a limit. It's fascinating to imagine how particles separated by billions of light years could be talking to one another, and yet the same mystery exists much closer to home. In the brain, it takes the coordinated effort of neurons scattered here and yonder to produce the three-dimensional image we call the physical world. This kind of coordination is also instantaneous, just as it is with elementary particles. The entire scheme works as a whole. On a movie set, the director calls for lighting, photography, sound, and action. Each one is a separate setup, and coordinating them takes time. But when you look out at the world, the mind doesn't say, "I got the lights going. Where's the sound? Will somebody cue the sound, please?" Instead, there is instantaneous coordination of all the elements needed to produce the movie of life. What this implies is that complementarity isn't a property of particles or matter in general. It's a property of consciousness. Actually, it is one of the most fundamental ways that consciousness manifests the universe, which supports the mind-first camp quite strongly. But if we keep piling on evidence for a conscious universe, is that enough to justify a human universe? Are we really positioned in the wheelhouse of creation? Or are we worker bees obeying the commands of cosmic consciousness? The question is rhetorical, because the only consciousness we know, or can possibly know, is human. Every law of nature became known through the human nervous system. We are the measure of creation, not by divine decree, but because of complementarity, which fits every aspect of nature into a scheme perfectly suited to human existence. All the other alternatives trap us inside mind-made boundaries. These boundaries carry built-in traps. For example, if we perceive human beings as accidental winners in the multiverse casino, then our existence depends upon random chance. If we perceive ourselves as products of physical forces, then we are no better than robots made of organic chemicals. If we tell ourselves that we evolved through survival of the fittest, then we are just the beastliest of beasts. If we see ourselves as a complex construct of information, then we are just a bunch of crunched numbers. Can reality set us free? At its core, the story of humankind has been a story of expanding consciousness. That's been the case for millennia, and the story is far from ended. But at least we can answer the 9 cosmic mysteries this audiobook began with. Mystery 1. What came before the Big Bang? Answer. A pre-created state of consciousness, which has no dimension. In this state, consciousness is pure potential. Every possibility exists in seed form. These seeds are made of nothing that can be empirically measured. Therefore, to claim that there was nothing before the Big Bang is just as correct as saying that everything existed before the Big Bang. Mystery 2. Why does the universe fit together so perfectly? Answer. It doesn't, because fitting together would mean that separate parts have to be carefully jiggled into place. In fact, the universe is one undivided whole. Its parts, whether we are talking about atoms, galaxies, or forces like gravity, are just qualia, the qualities of consciousness. All qualia exist on the same playing field as far as reality is concerned. You go to the same place to see the image of a rose in your mind's eye that nature goes to when it creates an actual rose. Mystery 3. Where did time come from? Answer. The same place that everything comes from. Consciousness. Time is a qualia, like the sweetness of sugar or the colors in a rainbow. All are expressions of consciousness once the universe was hatched from the womb of creation. Mystery 4. What is the universe made of? Answer. The real building blocks of the universe are qualia. There is room for infinite creativity depending on the observer. The state of awareness that you are in alters the qualia all around you. A sunset isn't beautiful to someone who feels suicidal. A severe leg cramp is negligible if you've just won a marathon. Observer, observed, and process of observation are intimately linked. As they unfold, the stuff of the universe emerges. Mystery 5. Is there design in the universe? Answer. The answer is trickier than yes or no. If there was design in the universe, the two would have to relate the way a potter and a lump of clay relate. Form would emerge from the formless by applying an external mind. A familiar homily in Christianity refers to the human body in this way, as the vessel of God. In reality, design is a conscious perception that is totally malleable. One person can regard a wildflower as a thing of beautiful design, while a second person sees it as a weed or a neutral biological specimen. After they vacate the meadow, a gopher may perceive the wildflower as food. Design is the interaction between mind and perception. It is permissible to see the universe as perfectly designed, perfectly random, a mixture of the two, or as some mystics would declare, mere dream stuff with no substantiality at all. Mystery 6. Is the quantum world linked to everyday life? Answer. This one is also a bit tricky. The qualia of experience change depending on your state of awareness. In our normal waking state, the quantum domain is too small to be experienced directly, and linking it to the world of large objects proves very difficult. With no experience to guide us, and with conflicting conclusions from laboratory experiments, physical linkages are controversial. But if you accept that the quantum domain isn't just mind-like, but represents mind taking on the appearance of quanta, then the answer is relatively simple. The quantum domain is another qualia realm like any other. It needs no link to everyday life, because all domains are constructed from consciousness. But a direct experience of the quantum realm is prevented by veiled non-locality and cosmic censorship. Mystery 7. Do we live in a conscious universe? Answer: yes. But this won't make any sense if your notion of a conscious universe is filled with thoughts, sensations, images, and feelings. Those are the contents of the mind. Remove the contents, and what remains is pure consciousness, which is silent, unmoving, beyond time and space, yet filled with creative potential. Pure consciousness gives rise to everything, including the human mind. In that sense, we don't live in a conscious universe the way renters occupy a rental property. We participate in the same consciousness that is the universe. Mystery 8. How did life first begin? Answer: as a potential in consciousness that grew from seed form into every variety of living thing. Choosing to call the soft green moss on a rock a living thing while denying life to the rock is merely a mind-made distinction. In reality, everything in existence follows the same path from its origin, dimensionless being, to a state that consciousness chooses to create out of itself. Since they follow the same path from the unmanifest to the manifest, a rock and the moss that clings to it share life on equal terms. Mystery 9. Does the brain create the mind? Answer: no, but the reverse isn't true either. The mind doesn't create the brain. This is another example of putting a distance between a potter and a lump of clay. Mind and brain aren't related in that way. Mind didn't find some primal stuff lying around in intergalactic space and fashion it into a brain. Matter didn't gather into bigger, more complex clumps until they got complex enough to begin thinking. The principle that applies here is complementarity, by which apparent opposites cannot exist without each other. There is no chicken or the egg dilemma, because reality creates opposites all at once. Being realistic, these answers sound very dissimilar to the answers you probably expected. We are quick to add, however, that nothing we've said is anti-science. What brought science to the end of its empirical methods wasn't a conspiracy of mystics, poets, dreamers, sages, and odd misfits. The everyday methods of science were outmoded by reality itself. In a universe dominated by dark matter and energy, where time and space break down at the Planck scale, it's not anti-scientific to look for a new way forward. We've put three cards on the table: qualia, consciousness, and the human universe. What game will be played with them? No one can predict. The most brilliant insights into consciousness that inspired the quantum pioneers have lain fallow for almost a century. Taking the physical universe at face value remains the default mode, with a few exceptions. In the end, we've been telling you about a hidden reality. It wasn't hidden intentionally or for mischievous purposes. The mind forged its own manacles, and it would take the history of the world to explain why and how. Happily, the urge to know reality can never be eradicated. And something inside us, whoever we happen to be, yearns to be free. It was a fateful day when Einstein sat down with the mystical Indian poet to wrangle out the true nature of existence. If Tagore was right that the human universe is the only one that exists, we face a future of infinite hope in the joy of creation. For future generations, "You are the universe" will be a credo to live by, no longer a dream wrapped inside a mystery. Appendix 1. Getting comfortable with qualia. For many listeners, the term qualia will be new and perhaps alien. We have placed so much importance on this word that we want you to be comfortable with it. One difficulty is that qualia are all-inclusive. Every experience is made of qualia, or qualities in consciousness. On a nice summer day, it's not hard to accept the qualia delivered by the five senses: the warm air, bright sunlight, the smell of newly mown grass, and so on. It's harder to believe that your body is also experienced as qualia. All the sensations you are having at this very minute would have no reality unless you experienced them personally, and therefore the body is a bundle of qualia. Going a level deeper, the brain's experiences are also qualia. When a concept becomes this universal, it's hard to know what to do with it. Where are the rules and boundaries? Or do we live in a reality made of qualia soup? And what about the experience of an external reality? A world out there? That is also a qualia experience. There are no rules to qualia that have the same status as the natural laws that classical physics laid down and that quantum physics took to an unimaginable level of sophistication. A ripe sweet peach floods the senses with experience, not numbers, equations, and principles. One can't use the same vocabulary as in the domain of physicalists. Sweet isn't heavier, lighter, bigger, smaller, or denser than ripe or warm. The great advantage of qualia science, if that's the direction science takes in the future, is how perfectly it matches reality. Tasting a peach is a direct experience, needing no conceptual framework. This very absence of abstract concepts greatly irritates many mainstream scientists, but it's the seed for a new view of nature.